Thank you, Your Honor. As you said, I'm Neal Rifkin, and along with my co-counsel...
Can you talk a little louder, Ms. Rifkin?
Can you hear me now?
Yes. I'm going to maybe turn... Say some... Yeah, go ahead.
As you said, I'm Neal Rifkin, along with my co-counsel, David Harshaw, the federal defender. I represent appellant Teddy Sanchez, and I will be presenting the entire argument, and will try to reserve 5 minutes. Sanchez appeals the denial of multiple habeas claims challenging his 2 first-degree murder convictions and death sentence for aiding and abetting Joey Bocanegra, who stabbed his parents, Juan and Juanita Bocanegra, to death. Sanchez's guilt-phase claim of ineffective assistance of counsel for failing to investigate and present Robert Reyes's admissions to Charles Seeley must be assessed in light of the prosecution's evidence against him at trial and all the available but unpresented evidence for his defense. The prosecution's case was far from overwhelming. It rested on 3 pieces of evidence.
Can I ask you a question, right? You said about Reyes. Now, my understanding is Reyes invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. So how could counsel have found a way to admit his statements?
Well, they would have been admitted because Charles Seeley would have testified to his admissions, and they would have been statements against interest.
So that's your theory on that? You don't see any... I mean, obviously, some of them, there's kind of... It's tricky here because I'm guessing that Joey Bocanegra skated on this because of... Sanchez and Reyes both invoked their Fifth Amendment rights, and then it got tricky as to the statements that I probably should not nice to call people snitches, but whatever, the people that were the jailhouse informants would be both of them took statements from Sanchez, right? So they're testifying as to what Sanchez says. So if they're testifying as to what someone else says, then it gets tricky because there can't be any cross-examination of Reyes.
That is correct, but the state has never argued throughout the history of this case that Reyes's admissions would not have been admissible.
Step closer to the microphone, please. I'm having trouble hearing you, Ms. Rifkin.
Yes, but what I was trying to say was that throughout the history of this case, the state has never argued that Reyes's admissions would not have been admissible under the statement against interest exception to the hearsay rule. Judge Callahan, you're correct that both Sanchez and Reyes made statements to jailhouse informants, and that was going to be the basis of the prosecution against each of them. In this case, jailhouse informant Hernandez was the only witness to testify to Sanchez's actions during the Bocanegra crimes, and the prosecutor bolstered his uncertain reliability with 2 corroborating witnesses. The prosecutor called reporters...
Well, but wait a second. Just so that I can keep all the witnesses straight, because we've had the first... It's sort of an unusual procedural way that we see things here, because the first part was a combination of the preliminary hearing transcripts and what witnesses testified in the guilt phase. The 2 officers?
The prosecutor, as I recall, called 7 witnesses. She called some law enforcement witnesses to testify about screwdrivers that were found on Sanchez when he was arrested for a burglary. They called the clerk from the Bakersfield Inn, this was on the Tapman non-capital,
right,
about receipts and property that had been found in Mr. Sanchez's room, and also to testify about the amount of money that Woodrow Wilson Tapman, the victim, had in his room.
The police officers also introduced Sanchez's statements to the police?
That was at the preliminary hearing, but the most important evidence that the prosecutor introduced as her additional evidence was reporter Trahi, and she was very clear in her argument to the judge in her closing argument that she was concerned that the judge may not believe Hernandez. She said the judge may not find him believable, and she used reporter Trihe, who testified that Sanchez, in one of his five interviews with the reporter, had said he was a triple murderer. She used that as a complete confession or admission to his guilt on the Bocanegras. Now, one of the things that Counsel Toten did not do is that he was given the opportunity to cross-examine reporter Trihe on all his published articles. And they, and as we say in our uncertified claim on this, Trihe, if cross-examined just on what he published about what Sanchez said, would have been able to explain that Sanchez was not admitting he was a triple murderer. He was expressing incredible remorse for not stopping Joey and killing his parents. The second bolstering witness that the prosecution called was criminalist Gregory Laskowski. And what he testified to was that there were only two sets of non-victim shoe prints in the Bocanegras kitchen and hallway. And this was essential for the prosecution's theory, because her theory in prosecuting Sanchez was that it was a two-assailant crime. And her whole case against Sanchez rested on Hernandez saying that Sanchez hit Juan, Mr. Bocanegra, and that because he said he hit Juan, he must have intended to kill him, and he also must have hit Juanita and intended to kill her because there was no one else in the house. Well, Mr. Laskowski's testimony, as he himself admitted after Sanchez's trial, was false. He came out with a supplemental report and said, oops, there actually were three sets of non-victim shoe prints.
Counsel, yes. Judge Gould, if I could interject a question. Sure. Could you please elaborate as to why, in your view, the prosecution's case totally rested on there being only two persons involved in the murders as opposed to three?
Yes, and I think that easiest way to do that is to look at Reyes's admissions. So if Reyes's admissions had been used in Sanchez's defense, what we would have had, Reyes said to Charles Seeley that he won with the bar, and that at that time, Sanchez was in the hallway. Reyes's admissions would have shown that Sanchez played no role whatsoever in the attack on Juan. And then, because the prosecutor, in her two-thirds person of the case, depended on Sanchez's actions against Juan to prove his guilt against Juanita, we would have a completely different situation. What we have with regard to Juanita's murder under the Reyes's admissions are that we would have, that counsel would have had the basis for arguing that his actions with regard to Juanita did not show an intent to kill. That what you have is him trying to move Mrs. Bocanegra away from Joey. Reyes testified.
Wasn't there some conflicting evidence on that point, though, about, I can't recall if it was that the fabric that was choking as well, and that the autopsy doctor said that it couldn't say for sure that she was choked, but that there was injuries to the neck that would be consistent with choking. Isn't that part of the evidence too?
It's not, that is not a complete statement of the evidence. There was evidence that there was a piece of cloth tied loosely around Mrs. Bocanegra's neck, but the prosecutor admitted at trial in her closing argument that it was a gag, that there was no evidence that it was used as a ligature or to strangle. So that she herself said that it was an attempted gag. So what we have is evidence that there's an attempt to tie up Mrs. Bocanegra and an attempt to gag her. And under Reyes's admissions, counsel would have been able to present a counter narrative to the prosecution's case, which would have shown that Sanchez's actions in trying to restrain Mrs. Bocanegra and then help Reyes move her to the back room away from Joey, trying to tie her up and quiet her, and then in an attempt to quiet her, hitting her on the head, all happened before Joey entered the room. If Sanchez intended that Joey kill his mother, he would have just stepped out of the way in the hallway. There, why would he have tried to push Mrs. Bocanegra, who weighed 299 pounds, to the back bedroom? Why would he try to tie her up and quiet her if his intent was to kill? And so when we
have... Ms. Rifkin, if I could interject, let's assume his intent was not to kill her, but his intent was to restrain Juanita so she didn't interrupt the murder of Juan. Wouldn't that be aiding and abetting?
Aiding and abetting on the...
Juan's murder.
It's interesting that no one in the 25 years of the litigation of this case has suggested that theory, but I think it would only be evidence of aiding and abetting Juan if it was proved that his intent in restraining Juanita was to aid and abet Joey in his attack on his father. And I think that when you have the counter evidence by Reyes's admissions, you have a fair inference that it was not to aid and abet Joey, that his attempt to restrain Juanita was not done for the purposes of aiding and abetting Joey. I think it's ambiguous.
But Ms. Brudnick, Judge Baer, wasn't there evidence that Sanchez, when he was handling, we won't say what he was doing, when he was handling Juanita, was shouting out to Reyes to shut her up, that Juanita was very vocal about what was happening to Juan Bocanegra and wanted to prevent his being killed. And then at that point, Sanchez restrained her and asked Reyes to shut Juanita up.
That is what Reyes testified to. Reyes, that with the heroin, daily heroin habit. That is what Hernandez testified to. Right. Reyes countered that and said it was Joey. Joey told his mother to shut up. That Reyes and Sanchez were pushing Juanita to the back bedroom. They were trying to strain her, keep her away from Joey. And then Joey comes into the room with a knife and tells his mother to shut up and starts to stab her.
Following up on Judge Gould's comment, isn't the fact that Sanchez restrained Juanita from going into the kitchen evidence that he aided and abetted the killing of Juan?
No, I think it's susceptible to a different inference, one that is consistent with
that's not the way you answer it, isn't it? That I mean, we have to find inferences in favor of the finder of fact. So one inference is that he was aiding and abetting. That's not the inference you want us to draw, isn't that one inference?
At the point that's under Reyes's statements, which were more detailed, more coherent, more consistent with the physical evidence, that Juan had already been killed. He might not have been dead, but he had already slumped to the floor when Sanchez was struggling with Juanita. And it's not clear that the intent was that if he wanted Juanita to be killed, he should have just let her run to Joey and been stabbed. That the evidence supports a finding of not having an intent to kill.
Now, there was a year between the guilt phase and the penalty phase, right?
Not a year. So there were the preliminary hearing happened over a number of, like on Fridays, a number of weeks in the summer, late summer of 87. And then, yes, the actual guilt phase happened in July of 88. And then the penalty phase. So in terms of the...
Yeah, there was kind of... I have a question about the three footprints. When did that come out? Was that Did that come out at the penalty phase, or was that after the penalty?
After Reyes was sent, that happened after Sanchez was sentenced to death, and the prosecutor, same prosecutor, proceeded against Reyes. She proceeded on the same two-person theory against Reyes. Reyes's attorney.
Didn't Reyes? I thought Reyes got a deal on a plea for life without.
Yes, after Colonel Sluskowski came up with a third set of footprints, then there was a plea bargain, and Reyes got parolable life sentences.
All right. So, but he didn't go to trial on the. He didn't go to trial, did he?
No, he ended up negotiating a plea agreement.
All right, so let's, when we get to the penalty phase, who were the witnesses? Tell me who the witnesses were at the penalty phase. How did the prosecutor, since a jury was hearing the penalty phase and a judge heard the guilt phase, how did the jury, what were the witnesses that the prosecutor called and what were the witnesses that the defense called in at the penalty phase?
With regard to the Bocanegra murders and the non-capital Tatman murder, the prosecutor approached this like a penalty retrial. She said she would when they agreed to this. She said she was going to approach the penalty phase as if it was a retrial. She put on her whole case.
That makes sense because she was arguing that those were the aggravating factors, right?
I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. What I'm saying is that defense counsel did absolutely nothing.
Can you tell me who the witnesses were?
The witnesses were Rufus Hernandez. Your Honor, I don't remember a whole list, but Rufus Hernandez, and I believe the both police detectives. I can't remember if all the blood spatter was introduced.
How did they get introduced? Your client had two prior violent assaults. How was those introduced?
The victims of those assaults testified.
Okay, so they were tested.
Yes, they testified.
And the reporter testified too, right?
No, the reporter did not testify at the penalty phase. Rufus Hernandez testified. And then the defense presented its mitigating case based about the social history and Sanchez's wretched childhood and adolescence.
So that jury did not hear the reporter's evidence at the penalty phase?
No. With regard to the penalty phase, if the court has no further questions on the guilt phase and effective assistance of counsel.
So what the special circumstance that survived was regarding the Bocanegra, and that was the multiple murders, right? Because the court did not find the specials on that the murder was committed in a robbery or that. Okay, so actually, Mr. Is it Toten or whatever? How do you say his name? Toten?
Trial counsel Toten.
Yeah, so he actually got some of the specials stricken at the guilt phase, right?
He did, but it was because the prosecution's evidence was very weak. Hernandez, the key witness, said, yeah, they went to rob and yeah, they went to borrow. And then the evidence showed that after the...
Well, I guess that's your explanation, but it's like since you're portraying him as a potted plant, essentially, that, I mean, the other side's going to say that he cross-examined witnesses and that he got some of the specials knocked out, right? So I just want to, like, put that in perspective.
But I think the question is not, yes, he did some things. The question really on ineffective assistance is what didn't he do? And he didn't present the defense that he himself said he would have liked to have presented. He didn't use Reyes's admissions to counter Rufus Hernandez. He didn't cross-examine Trahi to explain this triple murder statement. He didn't hire a criminalist and challenge the prosecutor's basic two-person theory by having a criminalist say there were three sets of shoe prints. He didn't investigate and impeach Rufus Hernandez, and he did no investigation of Sanchez's mental state. So I think the question is, we have to look at what he didn't do in assessing whether he was ineffective. And at the penalty phase, it's clear that...
Well, I have to look at what someone didn't do. I also have to look at what they did do, don't I? I mean, I can't just look, you know, I guess I'm trying to... I got to look at both sides. You don't have to tell me both sides, but I got to look at both sides because the other side's going to say that. And we have to look at prejudice, too.
But what he did is not inconsistent with all the things he could have done. He could have knocked out the Celimer special and still have created a reasonable doubt on whether Sanchez intended to kill Juan or Juanita Bocanegra and aided and abetted Joey. I don't see those as mutually inconsistent. And if we turn to the penalty phase, we see the failure of counsel in a very stark terms. There can really be no question at this point that defendant's mental impairments can be powerful mitigation, and that defense counsel has a duty to investigate defendant's mental state if there's evidence to suggest that he may be impaired. It's not surprising in this case that the district court did not deny claim 48, and the state does not argue for affirmance of claim 48, affirmance of the denial, on the grounds that Sanchez failed to allege a prima facie case of deficient performance in state court. As Sanchez alleged, there were numerous red flags to put counsel on notice to investigate his mental state, including the pretrial sanity evaluation by Donaldson, jail medical records to show he was in a safety cell on three occasions and attempted suicide, and the defense's own penalty expert urged counsel to hire a neuropsychologist.
So is that Wright that you're talking about?
Yes, Isabel Wright.
Okay. There were two medical people that did see your client, correct?
That's
and that
right.
Would be Dr. Donaldson, which Mr. Toten and Mr. I don't know what the Mr. It's not okay. I want to say it's not Grant. It starts with an F. It's Frank. Okay, Mr. Frank and Mr. Toten, and then there was a Dr. M with a long name that also and they said certain things about your client, but they also both said that he's a sociopath. So. I guess my point is that as a lot of things that there's also damaging information included in all the things that you want them to do, as well as positive information. So, we have to look at that in terms of counsel trying to navigate that. I mean, I don't know. At one point your client said he killed how many people? As a gangster? Yeah.
He said that was completely uncorroborated and they didn't believe
it. Well, and it didn't come in, but I mean, your client was a little bit of a walking time bomb. He talked to the press how many times? Five before he stopped. And then the doctors that looked at him said he was a sociopath besides everything else that was wrong. So it wasn't like calling people was that easy. I guess that's what I mean,
in terms of the mental health mitigation claim, it's clear that Mr. Sanchez cooperated completely with counsel, except for talking to the press, and that he cooperated with mental health evaluations. Dr. Donaldson makes one statement at the end of his analysis in which he finds and puts counsel on notice that there were indications of organic difficulties, and he doesn't just say there might be a possibility. He's finding specific things. He, in his supplemental declaration, explained that his evaluation was done without any background information. I mean, his diagnosis of being a sociopath, as Dr. Foster says in his declaration, was unreliable because it was based on none of the information that a psychiatrist needs to make a confident.
Do either Frank or Toten say that Wright told them to hire someone? Do either in their declarations?
In their declarations, they did not. And of course, since this was all Sanchez's burden was to plead a prima facie case and present whatever available documentary evidence there was, there was no opportunity to have a subpoena power and call people to testify and then prove the claim.
So, and then Wright's declaration was, we got her declaration post. It's for the habeas, right?
Yes.
And then she died before she actually signed a declaration. Is that correct?
After she had revised it. But in this case, you can. I think that the idea that the mitigation could have there could have been adverse evidence. That's true in any case. But you have to look at what the actual evidence was. the state here has not pointed to there, other than the sociopath single sentence, unsupported, unexplained in Donaldson's and Medicare's report. There's no sense that if that Foster explains the diagnosis should have been post-traumatic stress and depression. And I think if we, and so I think that the idea that there could have been a counter.
Well, let's say hypothetically, you could have found someone that would say the things that you're talking about and not say that he's a sociopath. I'm just trying to, and you called that person as a witness. Wouldn't the prosecution be able to call his rebuttal to doctors that said he is a sociopath?
Well, first they wouldn't have known about Donaldson because the only reason the state knows about it now is that the report was disclosed in habeas. But I think that the fact that there could be a counter opinion does not defeat prejudice, given the documented detailed declarations that should have resulted in an issuance of an OSC and then further litigation and a chance to prove this in state court.
I'm going to ask Judge Gould's indulgence that there's something I want to ask her about state proceedings in CHU that you'll give her 5 minutes after I finish.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Thank you. So I don't want you to stress over that. Okay, I know that there's a CHU petition here, and I couldn't find anything. Is it stuck in Superior Court, or what is the status of that?
So the status of the CHU petition is like a lot of the petitions now in Superior Court under Prop 66, is it's stayed pending the California Supreme Court's decision in a case called Friend, which is going to decide some of the big challenges to Prop 66.
So technically, I'm just trying to sort of, So technically, the fact that the two specials were stricken on the robbery murder, that's helpful to you in the CHU petition, right? Isn't that helpful?
Actually, counsel, excuse me.
Well, it seems that it would be, because the whole point of CHU is that it while it doesn't necessarily get rid of felony murder, but it does get it to where the foreseeable argument is made, and that
yes,
people
felony murder has no relationship to the CHU.
Well, but he could but technically, I'm just if let's say his CHU petition were granted on both of these murders, then that would be complete relief, right? Because it's wouldn't it be?
It would be if it's a complete grant of a new trial. Yeah, I mean it would be reducing. It's complicated, Your Honor, and I'm not actually prepared to sort through right now all the permutations of what might happen in the CHU petition, because we haven't actually started to litigate.
Well, I guess though, but there could be an argument. I'm just trying to that if. If a person was, if the only theory that they're found guilty of is on the foreseeability or whatever, then CHU basically says that's an insufficient basis for first degree murder, yeah, right?
It is, and then it would be reduced. In this case, we have the multiple murders special, which
and if it's reduced, then you're not looking at the death penalty. So
that is absolutely correct.
I know you don't have to tell me every avenue of it, but I mean that is a significant
avenue. That's absolutely right. That if we prevail on the CHU petition, then the death penalty is off the table.
Okay, I'm done with that. But I know I've asked you a lot of questions.
Okay, so I'm going to reserve the time you've given me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, for appellees, we have Ms. Schattinger. Appellees.
We're ready.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Jamie Schattinger, Deputy Attorney General for the appellee.
You need to suck luck. Ladder 2. There's something about this, so use your outside voice.
Yes, Your Honor. Is that better?
It is.
Thank you. From the beginning of this case, counsel was focused on the end. They tried to build a coherent, reasonable strategy to try and save Sanchez's life. We're not going to look at individual pieces of evidence. Instead, we have to look at the whole picture, both under 2254 and in light of what counsel could do at the time. This was a time-sensitive case where Sanchez wouldn't stop pleading guilty to the press, and Totten was afraid that Reyes would strike a deal with the prosecutor and testify against Sanchez.
So, I'm curious here, though. Counsel for Sanchez says that Reyes's statements could have been admitted at the Sanchez trial. I'm kind of having a hard time with that. Can you address that evidentiary issue?
Yes, Your Honor. I am unaware of any hearsay exception that would have allowed Reyes's statements to Seeley to be admitted at Sanchez's trial, where Reyes was not a party. The only evidence from Seeley that could have come in that would have been admissible were Sanchez's statements to Seeley, and those were far from a dream for at least five reasons. As we mentioned, Your Honor, Reyes had already invoked his Fifth Amendment right and wasn't going to be testifying. So all that they were left with was Sanchez's statements, which had Sanchez pushing Juanita into a back room, tying her up, hitting her with a pipe. And as this court alluded, the evidence could some fair-minded jurist could find that the evidence showed that Sanchez pushed Juanita into the back bedroom to like a kidnapping, to prevent her from helping Juan and to put her alone so that she would be a better victim. They would have also heard Sanchez's statement to Seeley that they laughed after the murders because it was no big deal. And that really went against all of the defense theme, which was to appeal to the jury for a plea of mercy and an LWOP sentence. You can't really do that with inconsistent themes and different theories of what happened. Seeley was also a hard witness for Totten because he knew that the DA wouldn't call Seeley. Now, Sanchez likes to say that that's because the evidence would have been so good. But really what it means is Totten didn't trust Seeley. He declared that he had had previous experience with him, and he didn't think that Sanchez had spoken to him.
Ms. Scheidegger, may I interrupt you for a second?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please explain to me, let me find out one thing if we're on the same factual basis. 2 weeks before the trial, Totten had a tape-recorded statement from Seeley, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
In that statement, Seeley exonerated Sanchez from hitting Juan over the head with a bar. He said Reyes did that, right?
That's correct.
What possible reason is there for Totten not to have called Seeley to the stand?
There were a few reasons. Seeley's statements, are you done with your question, Your
Honor? Go ahead. What two reasons?
Seeley's statements were inconsistent with the evidence at the trials at the crime scene. So for example, the blood evidence showed that the attack on Juan started in the hallway, not in the kitchen. And according to Seeley's version of the events, Reyes and Joey attacked Juan in the kitchen. So Seeley's statement would have been subject to impeachment from physical evidence. Also, Seeley's statement still inculpated Sanchez in Juan's murder by he was in the front room of the house while Reyes and Joey were stabbing Juan in the kitchen. Then he pushed Juanita out of the way as she comes screaming in to try and help her husband. He binds her in the back bedroom and starts hitting her with a pipe. So those are two very important reasons why Totten would have elected not to call Seeley as a witness to give the damaging statements that Sanchez admitted. And of course, you'd still also get other inculpating statements about laughing after the murders without any of the Reyes portions of the admissions to Seeley.
So what was the testimony that Sanchez said to the police about what had happened? How did that correlate to what Seeley said Sanchez told him. How did those jive?
Well, Sanchez said lots of different statements to lots of different people. To the police, he said to Stratton, that he gave hypos. What if I was in the house? What if I saw Joey stabbing his father? His own statements then put him in the room and saw, put him knowing what happened. As the prosecutor explained in closing, that showed his mental intent of intent to kill. Even Sanchez's own statements to police hurt him. And then, of course, we had the repeated admissions to the press where he said he's a triple killer, where the murders were brutal. And perhaps most importantly, he described how the murders happened. So once again, he put himself in the house during the time of the murders.
How did the statements about the murders to the press, how did those correlate to what he said to Seeley?
Seeley's statements were inconsistent with what he said to the press. What Sanchez said is to Seeley, let me get this straight here. To Seeley, Sanchez told Seeley that it was Reyes and Joey who attacked Juan. But Sanchez told the press, Trihe, and published reports that he attacked Juan, that they were three brutal murders, Tatman, Juan, and Juanita. So Seeley's evidence would have already been rebutted by the physical evidence, including Sanchez's footprint, bloody footprint found in the kitchen, and the attack of where, or the location of where the attack began, and his own statements to Trihe and Brown, plus Hernandez and Stratton.
So it's fairly unsatisfactory here that Joey Bocanegra was completely dismissed. And I don't know if on Father's Day and Mother's Day, he laments that he's an orphan, but was what it in under all of these statements, it certainly seems that he had something to do with it. Why did he escape?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. And actually, I think that the part about Joey is important because it explains why Reyes's testimony or admissions to Seeley would not have been admissible. The problem the state had with Joey's prosecution is that they only had statements by co-conspirators. Those are inadmissible. So Joey's fingerprints being in his parents' house didn't have much evidentiary value, and they only had Reyes and Sanchez talking about Joey's involvement. In the same way they couldn't make a case against Joey, Reyes's statements couldn't have been from Seeley, could not have been introduced at Sanchez's trial.
Did he ever get an offer of LWOP, or is my understanding it was little that he didn't, on the time he was supposed to cooperate, he wouldn't or something? Toten was trying to get a...
So there's two points I would say to that. But Joey helped himself. He didn't talk to the police and he didn't enter a plea. What Riles declared was, after the guilt phase evidence, Totten told her that Sanchez would give him information on Joey. And that really would have been Sanchez's opportunity to help himself, to go with the defense theory of, let's try to seek mercy in an LWOP sentence by helping the prosecutor. But Sanchez refused, not Totten. Totten was the one who set it up to try and help his client. Sanchez refused to help himself by telling on Joey, despite the fact that he had already been convicted of capital murder, of first degree murder.
What, and Joey's wife gave him an alibi?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you know anything about the CHU proceedings?
I know the court. Not much more than Ms. Rivkin. I know that we have stipulated to a stay until friend has been decided. It's not clear to me that the CHU will be dispositive in this case.
What about Wright? What about calling medical, further establishing either his drug usage or, you know, sniffing glue? And I guess didn't he have some organic brain damage at 18, something along those lines. What Why didn't anything come in about that?
Well, Your Honor, as we've said, counsel was focused on the end, and that was seeking mercy of an LWOP sentence. So pointing out different parts of things that it could have been was A, inconsistent with that theme, but B, there was no evidence in 1987 of organic brain damage. There was evidence from Donaldson's report in 87 and Matichowiak's report that Sanchez was a sociopath with borderline personality disorder, who was an alcoholic and a drug user, and pretty much a transient and school dropout. That could have led to some mental health evidence, but that was a pretty risky calculation that this court can't find Sanchez ineffective for failing to do. I also wanted to clarify as to this court's question of who testified at the penalty phase. For the prosecution, Boggs testified and the pathologist, Boggs being the officer involved.
Since the jury that sentenced him to death didn't hear how the murders occurred, how did you put that into evidence?
How did the prosecutor put it into evidence? They had to do that through the law enforcement officers, through his admissions. Because Trihe did not testify, they didn't have the evidence from the newspaper articles. They just had the articles, for example, at the guilt phase, to really focus in on what Totten knew. And to that point, Totten knew there were major landmines in a mental health defense where the jury would learn he was a sociopath, even in 1987. To say that 7 or 8 years later, we could have other mental health experts review what they themselves had done prior and find things that could have led to further investigation is not the standard we're looking at in this court. What we're looking at is did counsel make a reasonable decision to prevent the jury from hearing that he was a sociopath with borderline personality disorder and drug abuse?
So tell me again, now just give me the list of witnesses that the prosecution called at the penalty phase and any for the defense, if any.
Yes, Your Honor. Rosanna McGrew, she had to do more with the Tappan murder. Mitchell Willoughby, Randy Boggs, Dr. Holloway, Glenn Grundius, Bob Stratton, Greg Laskowski, Rufus Hernandez, Bob Stratton, Hassan Anmari, Arturo Pena. Those were the prosecution witnesses. And then for the defense, they called Robert Reyes, but he invoked. Christina Reconomy, who was the defense investigator, who tried to vouch for Wright's declaration, which was unsigned and therefore of no value. Joey Bocanegra, who also took the fifth, and then family members or people who knew and cared about Sanchez, like Stacy Zoller, Barbara Alvarado, Bobby DeArmond, Dr. Wright, and Robin Sanchez, his wife.
So Dr. Wright testified at the penalty phase?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that the same Dr. Wright that died later?
Yes, Your Honor. She was hired to do a social history and sort of paint Sanchez in a sympathetic.
Right. What did they call it? A social
historian or anthropologist?
Yeah. Anthropologist, social anthropologist or something along those lines.
Yes, Your Honor. And she did as good a job as she could at presenting the defense theme in a plea for mercy. That is, he had a terrible childhood. And in fact, even the prosecutor admitted that he had a terrible childhood and was entitled to, you know, sympathy for that, that his mother didn't love him and that he was poor. But notably, in the presentation of the penalty phase evidence, they omitted evidence of drug use, alcohol use, because that didn't go toward a defense theme of seeking mercy.
So can you explain the two footprints and three footprints and the significance of that and because that never came out to the apparently that was argued, right? And
yes, that's wrong.
I mean, ultimately that's wrong. So when do we find out that there were actually three footprints?
We learned that the evidence showed that there were three footprints after Sanchez's trial. Just to clarify, the prosecutor didn't say there were only two. The prosecutor said the evidence showed there were two. And there never was any question that there were two, Sanchez and Joey, in the house. Even Hernandez's statements to Seeley say that. So what we know is that at the time of trial, Laskowski only saw two shoe prints, and that's what he testified to and what the DA relied on, because that was the state of the evidence. And of course, they couldn't argue things not supported by the evidence. After trial...
Okay, but knowing that there's three, actually, how could they have argued differently if they had known there was three?
There's no evidence in 1987 that anyone knew there were three shoe prints. It's different to say that they thought there were three people in the house, but to say there are three shoe prints, there's no indication in 1987. There's no expert that Sanchez has found now to say in 1987, I would have been able to tell you there were three shoe prints. So the only evidence was two shoe prints. That could have been because...
Did the prosecutor ever argue that only two people committed the crime?
She said there were two people in the house, not only two people. And that's important because the prosecutor was relying on the evidence available. The evidence showed two footprints. The evidence showed two people. After Sanchez's guilt, or after Sanchez's penalty phase trial, as the DA was preparing to try Reyes, she asked Laskowski to re-examine the evidence. And she corrected Laskowski's declaration to say, I didn't tell him to find me three footprints. Perhaps through her preparation of trial for Sanchez, she realized there really may be three sets of footprints in the house and asked Laskowski to re-examine the evidence. And when he did, he found a third shoe print. That's when the third shoe print evidence...
Judge Gould, if I may interject for just for a moment, I thought that the appellant was arguing that the prosecution's case hinged on there only being two footprints, so that there couldn't be a conviction if there were three. So what's your view as to whether or not the prosecution case depended on there being only two footprints?
The prosecution's case was based in the evidence available, the physical evidence, the bloody shoe prints, and Sanchez's statements to the press, and Sanchez's statements to Stratton and Hernandez. That showed that there were two. It didn't show there were only two. And that is the distinction. It is not that the prosecution's case hinged on only two assailants. It is that Sanchez and Joey stabbed Juan and beat him over the head and then pushed Juanita into a room. Now, it's possible that Reyes also was involved in that, and the evidence tends to show that. But the prosecutor's case did not hinge on only two. It hinged on, based on the evidence presented in 1987, there were two shoe prints found. And a third shoe print, frankly, only bolstered the prosecution's case given Sanchez's admissions to others, to Hernandez, to Trihe, and to Brown.
Well, in what way could a third shoe print be exonerating?
That's an excellent point, Your Honor. A third shoe print wouldn't have helped Sanchez because by all accounts, Sanchez was in the house with Joey. So a third shoe print would just show that there was a third person in the room with Joey and Sanchez. And that really goes, I think, to an important part of this, that Sanchez, you can't be prejudiced by a third shoe print because he was still in the house. He was still there. It didn't exonerate him. It only inculpated Reyes. And the reason, excuse me, Your Honor.
No, go ahead.
And the reason that the third shoe print mattered in the Reyes case is because Reyes had told the prosecutor, or likely Reyes's attorney, if you find a third set of shoe prints, I'll plead. So this is how that came about, and that is why Reyes pled. Riles declared that she thought that Sanchez was more morally culpable in these murders, though they were both equally guilty.
So what about, I think Judge Bea asked a question about regarding Juanita and the can the evidence be viewed that Sanchez was trying to restrain Juanita so that Juan could be killed? I think that Ms. Rivkin made her point was that she said, well, the prosecutor never, you're the first person that's ever said that, Judge Bea. So what about that?
Your Honor, the evidence, I think, viewed in a light most favorable to the judgment and under a doubly deferential standard as required under 2254, the evidence clearly shows that that was part of Sanchez's shared intent with Joey to kill his to kill Joey's parents, the Bocanegras. It's not that Sanchez pushed her into a room to keep her quiet. He pushed her away so that she couldn't help her husband. She couldn't continue to scream and perhaps gain assistance from someone else. He pushed her into a room. He bound her hands and feet. And it's interesting, the prosecutor did say at closing that there wasn't evidence that he was trying to strangle her. But if I were trying to quiet someone down, I wouldn't put a cloth around their neck. I would put it around their mouth.
Well, was the pathologist's evidence something to the effect that there were marks on the neck?
There were marks around the neck showing something like a ligature, but she was not strangled.
Ms. Scheidegger, may I ask a question of you? Witness or other evidence was there that Sanchez's purpose in holding on to Juanita or moving her into another room was for the purpose of restraining her intervention in the murder that was taking place of her husband Juan? Who testified to that?
There was not testimony, Your Honor, about his intent in pushing her into the back room. You can just view the facts in a light most favorable, and that shows his shared intent with Joey in stabbing Juan, preventing his rescue, and in any event, pushing Juanita into a back room and hitting her over the head.
Let me interrupt you. Wasn't there part of the article that was brought in by Trihe, the reporter, that Sanchez was restraining Juanita from aiding Juan?
Yes, Your Honor, that's a great point. He also slipped in Juan's blood. Trihe reported that he slipped in Juan's blood as he tried to jump over and get to Juanita, which is yet another indication that he was trying to get to Juanita to keep her from getting to her husband and seeking to help him.
Just so that I understand, and I went over this with counsel for the appellant, Ms. Rivkin, that at this sort of odd combination court trial, slow plea type of thing, but it was determined it was not a slow plea because there were actually witnesses that were called and that Totten cross-examined. What was Totten successful in striking from the information, I guess, or that it would be the complaint or the information, I guess?
He was found, that's a great question, Your Honor. He was found not guilty of robbery and felony murder for the Bocanegras. So he got a special circumstance knocked off. And that's important because now we only have the multiple murder special circumstance. And he also got the special circumstance stricken on the Tatman murder. Totten really agonized over the best way to represent Sanchez because, as Totten explained in open court, this was a catch-22. Sanchez wouldn't stop pleading guilty to the press. He wouldn't help himself by giving information to the DA that would have spared his life. And perhaps more importantly, Totten was afraid that Reyes would plead on his or would strike a deal with the prosecutor and testify against Sanchez. So what Totten was able to do with this is really limit the evidence that was introduced to the preliminary hearing where Totten believed there was less evidence of guilt on the Bocanegra murders, the ones that he was ultimately sentenced to death for. It would be pretty much conceding on the Tatman murder, notably not the capital murder in this case. But it was the best thing he could do because Sanchez wanted to plead guilty. and Totten couldn't let him just plead guilty. So in this way, he was limiting the evidence available and really limiting what the prosecutor could do.
Remind me of why the reporter didn't testify at the penalty phase.
Well, the reporter only testified at the guilt phase, you know, to two specific facts: that Sanchez was a triple killer who killed for their Social Security checks. And Sanchez says that he wasn't cross-examined at all. He was. There just wasn't very much evidence produced from the reporter's evidence that could be used, that needed to be cross-examined. It was print evidence, and had Totten cross-examined Trihe more, perhaps the prosecutor would have rebutted with, show us how Sanchez showed you how the murders took place.
Well, was the prosecution trying to put in more evidence on Trihe? Did the court limit the evidence?
The court limited the evidence. So the articles were only admitted for the fact that they were published. What we get from the articles is more in terms of the IAC claims now, because we understand all that Totten knew. But before the guilt phase, the Trihe testified to only two facts. And Totten did the best he could to cross-examine Trihe on those two facts. But as Totten explained in his closing argument, he didn't want to take stabs in the dark as to what Trihe would have said on cross-examination, given that Totten thought that he would be getting all of Trihe's notes. And once he realized he wasn't going to be getting that, he didn't want to go on a fishing expedition.
Are you telling me, pardon me, I took a note, you're telling me that the articles were admitted only to prove they were published, and they were not admitted as evidence of what Sanchez said?
The articles were admitted at the guilt phase for the fact that they were published. The evidence introduced... Well,
what relevance is it whether they were published or not?
They were admitted for the truth of the matter that he said those things, weren't they?
That's what I think, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I have that confused. Yes,
yeah,
Your Honor.
That's it. You're not right on that. I mean, that doesn't mean just because there's a newspaper article, that doesn't do anything. They were admitted for, but you wanted to admit them, I think, for more, because he said more than was just allowed to come in. But the court limited it to a few things that could come in, right?
That's correct. All that Trihe testified to were those two facts. But the article.
We know that Sanchez said more to Trihe than that.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that would have informed Totten's decision in his cross-examination of Trihe, because he knew those articles had lots of other bad things that he would not have wanted to highlight for the guilt phase.
Counsel, Judge Gould, if I may interject a question. Is there any clearly established federal law, and by that I mean Supreme Court law, that says that a felony murder could not support a death penalty?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
And now, given the fact that the state court knocked out the robbery special circumstance, could felony murder be proven in this case?
As an alternate theory, Your Honor? Do you mean
yes.
At trial?
Yeah. At trial. Could that have been proven?
Well, the felony murder, the trial court found that the felony murder special circumstance was not here because Sanchez didn't form the intent to rob until after the Bocanegras were murdered. Had the trial court found Sanchez guilty of felony murder, that could have for the Bocanegras, that could have also been a special circumstance to support the death penalty.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
So the theory of the conviction is that they went in there to get the Social Security checks, and at some point they decided it went bad, and they decided to kill them. Not that they were going to kill them as part of the
putting evidence on that
robbery, or that they were going to rob them.
There was conflicting evidence on that, Your Honor, on whether their intent was to rob the Bocanegras when they went
or to borrow
money. And that when Juan declined Joey's either request or demand for money, they began fighting. And as Sanchez said to Detective Stratton, Juan hit Joey. And in response, Joey became so angry, he started hitting his father. But there's every indication in the record that they didn't start the robbery until after the Bocanegras were murdered. And they had already started cleaned themselves up. So the felony murder on the Bocanegras was not a clear case. And I see I'm over my time. I just want to say we can't look at the pieces of this. We need to focus on what counsel knew and what counsel could do in 1987. And their best shot was to fight for Sanchez's life to get an LWOP sentence by building rapport with the jury to show that he was deserving of mercy.
Okay, are there any further questions for appellee of...
I guess so. You're saying it's your position, basically, that there's no evidence that he's factually innocent of any of the murders. So that was a righteous theory to try to save his life.
Sanchez repeatedly admitted that he was guilty. And in fact, he never wavered on wanting to plead guilty. So the best the prosecutor could do was build a coherent theme that the jury could trust and build rapport. There's no indication, there's no evidence that Sanchez was actually innocent of any of the murders. Sanchez admitted to being a triple murderer who killed people for their Social Security checks in a brutal manner and explained how the murders occurred.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you very much. So we'll hear from Ms. Rifkin and Ms. Lee. The courtroom clock should be set for Ms. Rifkin to give her a full 5 minutes of rebuttal. Thank you.
I have several points I'd like to address. First, as the admissibility of Reyes's admissions, on our opening brief, page 45, footnote 7, we explain the admissibility and cite two of this court's cases, Luna versus Cambria and Sanders versus Rattel. The state has argued that Reyes's admissions would have been inconsistent with the physical evidence. This is incorrect. The only thing they would have been inconsistent with was Hernandez's testimony. I agree with counsel for the state. We have to look at the whole picture. And in this case, there was a defense. And Toten did nothing. Toten knew he was going to be disbarred. He had already decided not to contest his disbarment. If he had looked at the physical evidence, not only would he have found the three shoe prints, but as a criminalist Morton, that declaration in our state habeas petition shows, the blood spatter testimony about how the murders occurred was completely open to attack. So, the whole theory, the whole notion that the state court could summarily deny this claim because Reyes's admissions were inconsistent with the crime scene evidence, that would be completely unreasonable. With regard to Trahee, counsel is absolutely right that the articles were only admitted for the proof, to prove they were published. And the reason Toten did this is he wanted to appeal the ruling denying him access to the unpublished materials. Toten's focus was completely on getting the unpublished materials, and what he totally overlooked, just like he overlooked the exculpatory value in Reyes's, was that the Trahee articles explained the triple murder statement, that it wasn't a plea saying he was guilty, it wasn't saying he had hit Juan or done anything that under the law would make him guilty of first-degree murder. With regard to Trahee's not wanting to stab, take a cross in the dark, that is completely inapplicable in this situation. Toten had the published articles before them. And I would refer the court to docket our supplemental reply brief, docket 64 at 10 and 11, where we set out exactly how helpful those statements would have been. The state said something about this being a compromise defense. Well, maybe that's what Toten did, but as with every IAC claim, Strickland is clear. Counsel must do a reasonable investigation before reaching his strategic decisions, or make a reasonable decision that such investigation is unnecessary. And on each of the claims that we raised, Toten did neither. Counsel had mentioned something about looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict. That is not the standard for an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. The standard is whether there's a reasonable probability that the evidence that wasn't presented would have so changed the picture that the jury might have reached a more favorable result. And in this case, Reyes's admissions would have presented two possible inferences, one toward guilt and one toward not guilty. And what we're saying is that there's a reasonable probability, had counsel done everything that we allege he did not do, in terms of investigating the guilt phase evidence and presenting the defense, that there's a reasonable possibility that he would have acquitted of first-degree murder of Juan and acquitted of first-degree murder of Juanita. With regard to the whole notion that Sanchez said he wanted to plead guilty, that excused Toten's deficient performance, we addressed that thoroughly in our brief. The last point I want to make is about the statements about Donaldson and Mavikariak. Donaldson was a defense expert who the prosecution would not have known about. He had one sentence about sociopath. Foster explains in his declaration why that was an unreliable. Mavikariak said nothing about Sanchez being a sociopath. He only said that he had borderline personality disorder. And his assessment, too, was based on no background information. It was a competency assessment. And I would refer the court to excerpt of record 1073 to 1076 on Mavikariak's report. In focusing on the whole, the question here is that an accomplice is always, in terms of the penalty phase, an accomplice has always been considered less culpable. And had the counsel produced the evidence was available, they would have been able to show what Dr. Froehling said, that on the Hall Standby 10, which is a widely used and respected test, neuropsychological test, Sanchez had an impairment index of 1.0. That's twice the threshold for impairment. And Froehling, in her career up to the point of testing Sanchez, had tested 650 people who had reason, where there was reason to suspect some kind of cognitive deficit. And she never before had tested somebody that had a 1.0 score. The truth of the matter is that Sanchez's impairments were not minor and they were not inconsequential. And had the jury been given that information along with the explanation of his actual role in the crimes, that he was an accomplice, and had that been emphasized, that the mental health evidence was not cumulative, there's a reasonable probability that the jury, at least one juror, would have thought that death was not the appropriate penalty. The court has no further questions.
Well, see, Judge Beyer, Judge Kaplan.
I have no further questions.
And I have no questions. I want to thank counsel for the excellent argument, and I thank counsel on both sides, both appellant and appellee. This case shall now be submitted, and we thank all of you for hazarding the open air with the virus around and for helping us out this way. Thank you.
Thank you.